the last word on Today FM with Matt Cooper.
Television time with Jennifer Gannon and Joe O'Shea. And I'm going to get straight to picks of the week. Joe O'Shea, what's your pick of the week for us this week?
Dr. Cassidy's Casebook, which starts tonight on RT1 at 9:30 p.m. And basically, this is the former state pathologist, Dr. Cassidy, who's talking about the most high-profile cases that she's been involved in. It's a series on RT1. I think it's going to be fascinating, especially, you know, we're all fans of police procedural dramas. We're all fans of true crime. It's become a genre that's become huge. And I think actually talking to somebody who was at the centre of not scores, but hundreds of murders in Ireland and some of the most high-profile cases of the past two decades, it's going to be a very interesting watch. So that's 9:30.
I presume this is based on the book that she brought out last year, which was very popular. And I know even when we did an interview with her about the book and put it up as a podcast, it was one of the most popular podcasts. There's a real public appetite for this type of thing, isn't there?
There is. And actually, and you're right, the book, and, you know, she's a good talker. She can tell a story, and she gets the drama around it as well, but conveys it in a very authoritative way, obviously, as you'd expect from a scientist. But she's a good communicator, so I think that's why it's going to really be worth to watch.
Jennifer, I'd had you down to watch this, and you've picked something as your pick of the week, which is right up against it at the same time.
Yeah, it's. I mean, you can record one, thankfully.
Yes, you can.
And the newfangled boxes.
I mean, Ireland is possibly one of the only countries that can have a celebrity state pathologist when you think about it. But my pick of the week is Three Families, and it's on tonight on BBC One at 9 o'clock. And it's based on real life experiences. So it's a drama, it's a factually based drama, and it's a two-part story set in Northern Ireland, and it follows three families whose lives are impacted by abortion. So it covers stories like there's a mother who realises that she could actually face prison time for helping her teenage daughter to get an abortion, where she's buying abortion pills on the internet. And then there's a newlywed couple who discover that their unborn baby will not survive to the end of the pregnancy, so that the mother will have to legally carry the child to term. And I really think it's vital to hear these stories, especially as access to abortion in Northern Ireland is still a very murky issue. And it's from the same producers that did the brilliant Three Girls. Three Girls was on BBC about 3 or 4 years ago, but it's also on Netflix, so you can watch it now. And that was the story about the grooming case in Rochdale. So I'm going to assume that these stories in Three Families will be handled with the same care and sensitivity that Three Girls was. And that was an astonishing watch. So I think this will be eye-opening for a lot of people.
OK, now let's talk other TV issues. Joe, tell us about this new RT series to celebrate Roddy Doyle's books turned into movies, The Commitments, The Snapper and The Van.
Yeah, I think this is going to be very popular because all of these books, of course, hold great place in the heart of most Irish people. And the Barrytown trilogy is, you know, The Commitments, The Snapper, The Van. It's kind of part of our pop culture and especially part of the 90s. So Colm Meaney is going to do a three-part series called Back to Barrytown and begins on RT1 this next Sunday. And basically, Meaney's going to take kind of a trip down the memory lane of the fictional suburb of Barrytown. And he's going to talk to the people who populated it, so to speak. So I think it's going to be, you know, in this, with reeling in the ears on at the moment, and with a lot of people kind of looking back as well, I think it's going to be a very good watch.
But and three parts is surprising. You would have thought maybe a one-off documentary, but to stretch it over three makes you wonder a bit.
Well, that's the thing, you know. I mean, I can see why they'd want to stretch it over three nights. It's a, you know, it's a good concept. It's a, you know, it's a great source material, and I suppose it was a trilogy, so that's the thinking behind that. I just wonder, will it be able to hold the interest over three nights? I guess we're just going to have to watch it and find out.
Let's have a clip of From the Snapper, where Desi, played by Colm Meaney, attempts to seduce Kay, played by Ruth McCabe.
Jesus. There's nothing on the telly tonight, is there?
It's never anything on.
Oh, you're right, of course, but there's absolutely nothing on tonight, is there? Suppose a ride is out of the question.
Hang on till I get this line done.
Are you serious?
I suppose so.
Great. You're not messing now?
No. Just let me finish the next line.
I'll go up and brush my teeth.
That'll be nice.
I presume, Jennifer, that's a line of knitting rather than a line of anything else.
Yeah, you'd hope. No, but I think there is something about those, especially the snapper, that the reason why people watch them time and time again is not only because they're so funny, but it's because it does show Ireland at a certain point in time. Like, you can look at it and go, we had that couch, or do you remember those tracksuits or those bikes or whatever, and it acts as this kind of time machine for us, and there's this familiarity and warmth and very easiness to it that's so enjoyable. It's like looking at Ireland through rose-tinted glasses, I suppose, a bit. But to be honest, I have to say, with the snapper, it was definitely the first time I saw an average, you know, working class family that I could relate to on the telly, and I think that was just such an anomaly.
I wonder how younger generation would look at it now, 30 years on. Look what Ireland was like in the late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah, I mean, I think the van especially ties in with what a lot of people consider the halcyon days of Italia 90, and there is this nostalgia and optimism about Ireland kind of bound up in it. And I think that, you know, would be interesting to see what the younger generation would think about. But I do think it's ingrained into their pop culture anyway, so they will be aware of it. But also it'd be interesting to see what they have to say about the commitments itself when you think about it, and Alan Parker having, you know, passed away only recently. But I do think it's an interesting take on something that we have such affection for.
OK, we've had a lot of affection for Alan Partridge on this programme in the past. And a couple of weeks ago, we wondered how the new series would actually go. So let's hear a clip from the first episode in which Alan was joined by the passive-aggressive reporter Ruth Duggan.
Joining us now from the British Airports Authority is our very own Ruth Duggan. Hello, Ruth.
Hello, Jenny.
Hi, Ruth. Ruth, we've been here before, haven't we?
Actually, no, it's my first time here.
But it's certainly a debate we've heard many times.
That's absolutely right, Jenny.
The ongoing question of runway expansion.
I'm not sure there's any talk of expanding a runway.
Isn't it about adding a runway?
Exactly right, Jenny. The benefits of a third runway are well known, but a new study suggests the harm caused by air traffic is worse than first thought.
But if the flight path goes through a residential area or even a school...
They tend to pass over schools rather than through them.
but you take my point.
I take your point.
You take my point.
I take your point.
While some say that runway expansion...
A third runway.
...will boost the British economy...
The UK economy.
...by as much as 30 billion.
Billion pounds.
What, was that not clear?
Well, you didn't specify the currency. It could have been 30 billion euros.
Or 30 billion dollars.
Exactly, Jenny.
Or 30 billion guineas, or 30 billion francs, or 30 billion Deutschmarks.
Ah, yeah, but they're euros.
That's right, Jenny. And that's what the aviation lobby wants to focus on, and not the health concerns, which could affect thousands. Mm.
Thousands of what, Ruth?
But with so
chairs,
much at stake and the two
beans,
sides so entrenched,
cats,
expect the debate
grapes,
to continue for some time.
Crabs.
People.
Ah, gotcha. Sorry, just wasn't clear, that's all.
George, I think that was one of the highlights of that. But how has this time with Alan Partridge been so far in season two?
That whoever picked the clip out there did a very good job, because that was one of the highlights. It's two episodes in and it's very good, as you'd expect. I mean, this is a character has been around with us since the early 90s, you know, and when he first started developing Alan Partridge. And it's just strange that he can still make him very relevant to TV today, and whether that's an indictment of TV today in that it hasn't really changed, and shows like This Time, which is a very good parody of the one show on Good Morning Britain, or just the talent of Alan Partridge. Now, what's interesting, this is the second series of this, and they're much more going behind the cameras, so to speak. So you're kind of seeing a lot more of the background stuff that's going on. It's gotten dark as Alan Partridge, I think people forget or underestimate, or when you don't see Alan Partridge for a while, you forget how unbelievably dark it can get. And there was a scene with John Thompson of the Fast Show fame in the second episode with a performing monkey that got a ventriloquist monkey that got very strange. And Alan went to a pretty dark place himself. It's good. It can be difficult to watch, because if you don't like cringy comedy, excruciating comedy, it can be very difficult to watch. Susanna Fielding is brilliant as Jenny Gresham, his sort of like I'll smile through anything co-host. He's great. It's good. And I don't know how long he can keep it up, because I get the impression that, you know, he's beginning to hate Alan Partridge. Even Steve Coogan, I think, dislikes Alan Partridge a lot, and I can see him getting to the point where he's going to kill him off, to be honest with you.
What do you make of it all, Jennifer?
I mean, I think that, I mean, I would love as much Alan as I can possibly get into my eyeballs, I'm happy with. But I think the people that are criticizing it, that saying it's a bit of a damp squib this time, are forgetting that this was the majority of the opinion at the beginning of the last season of this time. And it's the same criticism that's been leveled at it. And then everyone saw, you know, Martin Brennan singing Come Out You Black and Tans, and then they forgot about it. And the thing with this time is that it does build to some kind of crescendo, like Knowing Me, Knowing You did. And also, I think people expect, when they think of Alan Partridge, they think of the peerless I'm Alan Partridge. But that only had two seasons. And like, it has the brevity of Fawlty Towers that makes you want more. And this is, you know, really different for the character of Alan. Like, that was really different for his character. I mean, like, that was all about a meditation about failure, and he kind of saw behind the scenes. But this is harkening back to his origins as a presenter almost. So, I mean, maybe people would be happier if it was more self-contained and had a shorter running time, like the way Mid-Morning Matters did. That was very bite-sized and visceral. But I just am really enjoying it still. And I just think there's that studied awkwardness to those type of live shows, with the brief pauses that feel like 10 hours long, and the technical difficulties and, you know, the truculent guests that he has to deal with. And I just think there's a real accuracy to it. And especially with Jenny Gresham, I think like that just adds another layer of legitimacy to the show, where you think, you know what, it could be real. You could, you know, it's not no longer a parody. It kind of flips into reality then, you know, and I still think it's worth watching.
Okay. Now, a decision has been made to remake the French hit Call My Agent in the UK, with UK cast, characters, the rest of it. Whereas that might once have been a good idea, Joe, is it going to work for the sort of the Netflix generation, who now are getting more used to seeing foreign television with the subtitles?
It's going to work for me, because I haven't seen it on Netflix. So this is the interesting thing about this. I'll go to it, and I know Jen probably won't enjoy it at all, but because she's seen and she loves, I think, the French version. But I haven't seen the French version, and I'll watch this. And I think a lot of people...
But the French version is terrific, Joe. You should watch it.
I know I should watch it, but I can't now because I know there's a UK version coming, and it's going to ruin it for me, because the writer is W1A, John Morton, who did a fantastic... I love W1A, and I think he'll do a great job with this. If I watched the French version now, it would ruin the British version for me. So I might do it the other way around and see what works. I'm looking forward to it. It's a good cast. Jim Broadbent is involved, and Lydia Leonard and Jack Davenport. And they're going to have, apparently the rumours are, they're going to have the most stellar lineup of A-lister talent to do the cameos that made the French version, I understand, such a great show. So I'm happy. I'm looking forward to it.
Okay, Jennifer, what do you think? Because I suppose The Office transferred across the Atlantic, didn't it?
But they generally, like, as the Office, the US Office went on, they had to actually change the basis of it, and it became more of a, you know, broad sitcom, like a very Americanized thing. And I just think with this, I just don't want to have another version of Extras, that Ricky Gervais program. Like, I really didn't enjoy that. But I do have to say, I am intrigued by the casting. I do think Jack Davenport, who played Miles in This Life, and he was great in The Morning Show, which he played Jennifer Aniston's husband. I think he's a brilliant pick, as he's going to be playing, you know, Mateus, like the head of the agency. So he's going to be playing that kind of role. And it's going to feature as well this social media kind of sensation, Harry Trivaldwin, I think. And he's gained a huge following during lockdown. He does like parodies a certain type of harried mothers, and, you know, talks about the horrors of small talk and work. And I think he'll be playing Hervé, which I'm going to be very aggrieved about, because he's my favourite character. But I think they have the right pick when they have the, as Joe was saying, the W1A creator on board, because I mean, that wasn't my favorite type of show, but it has a similar tone. I can see the similarities between it and Call My Agent, because they both satirize these industries without being too acerbic. It's more from an affectionate viewpoint, unlike something like The Thick of It. It's more gentle comedy, and I think that will appeal to a broad audience. And I am kind of looking forward to seeing who they will nab for the cameos, definitely.
Yeah, I wonder who they'll be able to get to play the equivalent of the wonderful Andrea Martel. Camille Cotin is brilliant in that.
Or Jean Gabin, the dog. Who's going to be Jean Gabin, most importantly? Will Wellard come out of...
It's probably the second best French programme at the moment. I don't know if either of you have seen Baron Noir on Amazon Prime.
No, I haven't seen this.
That is... It's like a French House of Cards. It is terrific.
Okay, right. So what's the name of it again?
Baron Noir.
Okay, I'm going to check that out.
All right. Now, other things, of course, I'll stay with you, Jennifer, given that you share my Succession obsession as well. And new cast revelations for it.
Matt, it's been 574 days since Succession has been on air, and I am feeling every single one of these days, and I miss my horrible family. We should be getting the third season by October, and but I'm really nervous because the expectations are beyond sky high at this stage, and we've really taken it to our hearts, and it does feel like it's doomed to disappoint in some kind of way because of all the hype surrounding it. But I have to say, and I have to say, these casting decisions have made me even more dismayed because there are two huge names added to the roster. So you've got Alexander Skarsgård. He's going to be playing Lucas Mattsson. So he's a successful confrontational tech founder. And then you have Adrian Brody coming in. He's going to be playing Josh Aronson, who's this billionaire activist investor. And he becomes pivotal in the battle for the ownership of Waystar Royco. And they're accomplished actors, but and they're not, it's not stunt casting, but I feel that, you know, the show relies on, you know, it does rely on excellent actors, but I don't want these OTT performances in Succession that'll distract you and take you out of the story. I think because of the widespread critical acclaim as well as the audience adoration of Succession, it's become a top priority, I think, for a lot of Hollywood stars to try and get on it. But I am happy to report that the brilliant, this indie film star, Hope Davis, she's going to be joining the cast as Sandy Furness's daughter. And that sounds really appropriate.
Okay.
I think it's the right fit for the show. But all I want is Peter Serafinowicz to play Tom's brother. I think that would be my favourite. I would cast that immediately. But I think...
Okay,
you know,
actually,
I'm
tight on time. So the one thing I want to get in is some of Elon Musk's jokes from his opening monologue on Saturday Night Live.
I'd first like to share with you my vision for the future. I believe in a renewable energy future. I believe that humanity must become a multi-planetary space-faring civilization. Those seem like exciting goals, don't they? Now, I think if I just posted that on Twitter, I'd be fine. But I also write things like 69 days after 420, again, haha. I don't know, I thought it was funny. That's why I wrote haha at the end. Look, I know I sometimes say or post strange things, but that's just how my brain works. To anyone I've offended, I just want to say, I reinvented electric cars and I'm sending people to Mars in a rocket ship. Did you think I was also going to be a chill, normal dude?
And that's it, Joe?
Yeah, I mean, this divided the critics. Some thought it was disastrous, others catastrophic. But it one thing that it wasn't was funny in any way, and it was strange. I mean, Saturday Night Live, I'm not a fan, a lot of people on this side of the Atlantic struggle to understand why Americans
Absolutely.
Think this is great TV. But Elon Musk, a risk for them. They did actually get their third highest ratings of the season.
Oh.
And it wasn't a bad show. Miley Cyrus was on and did a great performance music performance.
Okay.
But he's just not funny. He thinks he's funny, he's not funny.
Thank you very much, Joe O'Shea, Jennifer Gannon.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Listen live, on air, from 4:30 weekdays on Today FM.